It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Jesse, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing outstanding. How about you?
I'm good, man. I noticed that you're sitting down, though.
Yeah.
You usually stand during these podcasts.
This is the first time I've sat during one of these.
Why are you doing that?
Played a lot of hockey lately. When you play a lot of games as a goalie.
But you have to have strong legs, though, right?
Yeah, you do. You do. But yeah. But when you play a lot of games back to back to back with no breaks.
Yeah. No breaks.
Yeah. It wears on you, and my legs are starting to feel it. I feel like I've been run over by a herd of wildebeest.
How many? 3 days in a row, and that's...
Yeah, I played three, but remember, though.
Yep.
Goalies are hot commodities in Vegas. There aren't very many of us.
I'm just saying.
So when I go, it's not like, oh, I got my team, I play 60 minutes and I'm done. I usually play for three teams per night. So I'll play... I go and I play three games. And last night, actually, I played for three teams. Then, the fourth game after that, the goalie was he played out the game before.
Okay.
So he had to go in the dressing room and get changed. And they're like, well, we don't want to wait for this goalie. It's going to take him 30 minutes. So I actually started the fourth game.
Oh, wow.
And then until he got his stuff on, and then we, like, did a line change.
So I remember you saying something earlier in the week. You were at City National Arena, and there was an adult tournament going on. And one of the goalies broke his stick and didn't have a replacement. Well, what did he play with the rest of the game?
Yeah, so I thought they should have made him play with a regular player stick. That would have been great.
It would have been nice.
Just a left-handed stick. But but he's like going over the bench. They're all like looking around. Nobody's got a backup goalie stick.
Don't tell me the other team.
The other team didn't have one either.
Oh, good.
But luckily for him, this was like a 20-team tournament, so there were a bunch of guys just like watching the game. So one of the goalies that wasn't playing in the game like brought over a stick and let him use it.
Like, how are you going to go to a tournament without a backup?
I actually broke my goalie stick two nights ago.
Did you?
And did not have a backup.
Did you break it because you were pissed off you let a goal in?
No, I don't even know how it broke, actually.
Really?
I'm playing with it, and all of a sudden, I look down, and it's just like hanging on by the tape. I'm like, I don't remember a hard slap shot breaking it because I've had sticks broken on slap shots before, but
sure.
No, I don't know how I broke it, but it did break. And then I just borrowed somebody else's because there's like a bunch of people at the rink. But yeah, goalies' sticks are hard to come by when you break one. It's not like a player's stick. Plus, players break their sticks all the time, so usually most guys will come to the rink with like at least two, sometimes three sticks.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you're the only goalie playing on your team, you have to have a backup.
And this tournament at City National was like there were teams from out of state. So that means they flew here.
Was it the Can-Am series? Canada-America series?
I do not know. I just saw that there were teams with like, one of the teams had Maryland in their name. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so they were definitely from out of state. But
were you watching saying, I could totally be the best goalie on the ice here?
I only watched one game and they weren't that strong, but they were all right. The goalies were the best. I thought the goalies were better than the guys playing outward.
Well, I would argue that it's easy to be really good as a goalie in men's league, more so than it is to be really good as a skater, because everyone, all the old people that I know that play hockey are just slow. So, like, as a goalie, everything develops slowly, so you don't really have to rely on moving cross-crease super quickly because, again, everything moves at a snail's pace when it comes to men's league hockey.
Well, when I watch the ice, the beer leagues in the ice, it's so much easier to be a goalie in the beer league on ice than it is to be in roller.
Sure.
All the shots come from the outside in ice because guys just aren't. It's harder.
They can't get to the blue paint.
Ice hockey is harder than roller hockey. So when you go to like a medium level roller hockey game, the talent is, I mean, there are a lot better scoring chances. There are highlight real plays, whereas when you go to a medium-level ice hockey game, it's harder to play ice hockey, and the guys can be more physical, so it's a lot of dump and chase rather than skilled plays.
Yeah, beer league hockey has been pretty frustrating for me, because I'm overweight and I can't skate anymore, at least not that well. But men's league hockey for me is really difficult because, like, there'll be those times where you are playing with guys that have a relatively high hockey IQ. Like, they know where to go. They know what spacing. And then there are just guys out there that just make a beeline for the net when it's not the right play. When, like, coming in as a unit as opposed to one guy skating really fast and the other guy not having any options because you just blow through all the passing lanes. And so I often find myself when I do play in those situations where I'm begging to play with somebody that knows how to play hockey, but then I can't keep up with them because I'm so slow. It sucks. I kind of just want to be a goalie.
Mentally, you're there. Physically, you're not.
No, well, yeah, no, absolutely. Like I remember, and it had been a while since I had played, but like one of the first times I played men's league here, the first game that I played, I scored 2 goals just because I was around the net. But like no one else goes around the net. Everybody's just like trying to do the one-on-one dangles, and it just it doesn't work. Like, A, you've got to have enough speed to do it. B, you have to know how to eliminate a defender. And these guys see Patrick Kane do Patrick Kane things, and they think they can do it because they know how to put the puck between their legs, and it doesn't work out that way. Now, I just physically can't get to the areas where I should be getting to. And that's why I have this love-hate relationship with playing beer league hockey.
Yeah, and but you get the beer afterwards either way, so it's all
well,
good.
that's always the benefit, right?
Yeah.
Like you go out there and you have a crappy game and you're like a minus 45, like Tomas Tatar, and then but at least you have beer after. It's great, right?
You think Tomas Tatar has beer after?
See, I would argue that he does because there was a picture of him and some Golden Knights hanging out with a DJ. I don't know what DJ.
Diplo. It was Diplo.
Diplo? That's his name?
That is his name.
It's not his given name, right?
I would probably guess it's a stage name.
Sure,
but
yeah.
I know him as Diplo.
Why would anybody choose that to be their stage name?
Could be worse.
Like?
Dead Mouse? Could see.
That's very true. I mean, you know, I guess that's true. Let's talk about the song that played at T-Mobile that made you really happy.
Oh, they played some Danza Kuduro. I was so happy. They've been playing it a lot lately.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about another song that they played at T-Mobile recently that had you feeling a little weird.
All right. So anyone that's been to a Golden Knights game knows that they have the VGK UFO, as they call it. It's the balloon drone,
basically.
It's the blimp, yeah, yep. that flies around the arena. They have now started gluing, taping, however they put it on there, a green alien onto it.
Right,
and they do the UFO cam up on the thing, and they've got cameras on it, and they go around and do the fence. But when they do this to make it a little more alien-esque, they play the X-Files song.
So real quick, in post-production, Ari, can you find the X-Files song and just drop it under what Jesse is about to say?
I sure can.
Okay, perfect.
All right, so now the X-Files song is playing. It's as creepy as we all know it is.
Yep.
It's not creepy in the arena when there are 18,000 people standing there watching, laughing. Oh, the X-Files, it's creepy.
Sure.
It is creepy when you're in the bathroom in the press box and you're standing next to Riley Smith and it's playing over the intercom. Just such an awkward situation to be in that I hope never happens again.
Were words exchanged?
No, no words.
You just felt his aura and it was weird?
I did not feel Riley Smith's aura.
You didn't feel that?
No, I felt nothing of Riley Smith.
He commands a room. It doesn't matter what room. It could be a locker room. It could be a bathroom. He just commands it.
We just both happened to be in the bathroom at the same time. The intercom in the bathroom in the press box plays the audio from the arena.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's how I check out Lawless and Order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Files song is not what I want to go to the bathroom to.
Did it hurt your performance or?
No. I think my performance was fine.
Was it in your head? Were you like, oh man, I really can't take a piss to this?
No.
All right.
It just was weird. I'm thinking, it's not weird in the arena. And I don't think the people that are putting the in-game entertainment in, they're not thinking, oh, I wonder how this will sound in the bathroom in the press box when the newspaper writers are in there with the players.
Well, but you know what they do care about in the press box? Gummy bears.
The snacks that are available are apparently a hot topic.
So I wanted to kind of segue into this one of the things, the best way that I know how, and that's to talk about gummy bears, right? So obviously there's this jinx that if there are no gummy bears in the press box, the Golden Knights cannot win a home game.
According to Lotus's own Adam Hill.
Well, yes, he appears on Lotus Broadcasting, but I think it would more or less be the Review Journal's own.
Yeah.
Adam Hill. Now, all that being said, you are known for jinxing things.
Well, I'm known for not believing in superstitions.
Well, you're known for being an asshole.
Yeah.
And jinxing Marc-Andre donuts.
Yeah. So, and that's a perfect segue because the
that's what I do.
The gummy bears thing is a superstition.
Sure.
It's stupid as all hell.
Is superstition the same as jinxing, though?
Yeah, because if you believe that a jinx is real, then you're superstitious. That is a superstition.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, and
right.
I think they're all stupid. All of them. There's no exception.
You have no superstitions.
Every superstition is dumb. All of them.
No, like you don't have to put one skate on. Like
no.
You don't have to always put your left skate on, then your right skate.
Nope.
No?
Makes no difference to me.
Wow.
If I'm playing in a game and I have a shutout, everyone can talk about it all they want. Doesn't bother me. I'll talk about it.
Well, you don't get very many shutouts in roller hockey.
I don't. Maybe it's because I'm jinxing them.
Yeah, no. Maybe it's because that word is getting in your head.
Jinxes are so dumb. I just don't see how people think that them saying a word has any effect on whether the puck is getting past a man on the ice that has no idea that they said it.
Remember the game where, I don't remember who it was, but Fleury was locked in the first period, and we were just like, you and I both threw the jinx out, and then Lucas Pisa'd all over the place.
Yeah.
And you got attacked on Twitter. You was like, Jesse Granger jinxed him. And you're like, yeah, you're right. It was totally me tweeting out the word shutout that made Lucas Pisa forget how to play defense.
Yeah, if only I hadn't tweeted it, then
he wouldn't have been out of position.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of talk about the shutout jinx, so I figured
right.
Who better to ask about it than Marc-Andre Fleury himself? So he did complete the shutout
mm-hmm.
the other night.
And you tweeted about it before
yeah,
it was
I
completed.
I did. I tried to jinx it. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. People don't mention it when it doesn't happen, only when it does. Only when he does give up a goal. But I go into the locker room, and I knew it was going to be good because Fleury's always good. So I recorded the video, and I'm like, if someone were to say shutout to you, would it bother you? And he goes, kinda. And you know what? That... I'm not superstitious, so it doesn't bother me if somebody were to say shutout.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see how how the players talking to Fleury could have some effect on him because it makes him think about it. It makes him nervous. That part I won't dispute. But then I asked him, if I tweet about it, is okay? He said, well, I won't see it, so yes. Because
always,
that's logical.
Always got to make it about you.
So, but then he, in usual Marc-Andre Fleury fashion, made it fun by saying, how about you just tweet donuts instead of shutout? Just talk about the donuts instead.
It's He's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will now say donuts because Marc-Andre Fleury asked me to say donuts instead of shutout.
So you're not going to say shutout.
I will say donuts from now on. Because Marc-Andre Fleury, the man who this affects, asked me. Not because anyone on Twitter believes in jinxes, they are idiots.
Well, but do you think he's an idiot for saying that you have to say donuts instead of shutouts?
He didn't say I have to.
I know. He said, I prefer if you just keep it to donuts, which is fine.
But he also said, it doesn't matter if I tweet it out because he doesn't see it. Like I said, I'm not superstitious. I think all superstitions are dumb. But I can kind of see how if in the middle of the game when he's doing a shutout, if people are talking to him about it, it could get in his head. He could be thinking ahead. He's not focusing on each save. That part kind of makes sense. It's the whole I'm sitting in the wrong chair in my living room, so they lost. I wore this jersey and it got ketchup on it. I'm never washing it because they won the game. That's you. You're an idiot.
I used to be pretty superstitious.
They're so
like when
dumb
I was when I was growing up playing hockey. Like my mom would always help me pack my bag for like tournaments and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I used to have to wear a press on tattoo. Like that was the thing. I'm not ashamed.
You were the goon of your.
No. I wasn't a goon. What are you talking about? I was awesome. I was fantastic.
Yeah, but you're the only 8-year-old with tattoos
on
full sleeve.
Come on, it wasn't a full sleeve. I wasn't that guy. I wasn't Ed Hardy, dude. Like I wasn't that jackass.
Same tattoo you have on your arm now?
No, because I didn't get that when I was 8.
But did you have a press on of it?
It was a press. It was Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers and that kind of stuff, right? So like I remember there was one time. And we were playing in San Diego, I think. It was like a 3-day tournament. It was like a President's Day tournament or something like that. And I swear to God, I packed my bag and we used to have like a drawer that just had tattoos in them. Like it was ridiculous.
You had a tattoo drawer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It explains a lot. I know it does. But the point is, like, I used to make sure everything that I, like, the last thing that I would do with my bag is I would put the tattoo right on top. So it would be right on top, and I would get to the arena. I would put one on. I'd be good to go.
With, like, you had to get, like, a rag wet, right?
And, hold absolutely. It on there. Okay. No, I had a tattoo rag. It was a whole thing. No, it was a whole thing. It was ridiculous. But, like, I remember I went to San Diego, and they were gone. And my mom and my dad and I drove to, I don't know, like 17 different Walmarts and three different, like all these different places just so that I could find one. Because I truly believe that if I didn't have it, I would be awful. So we found a tattoo and I was fantastic that weekend. It was great.
Because of the tattoo.
It absolutely was because of the tattoo.
See, I'm not going to fault you that much because you were 8. Everyone over 8 is the ones that I'm, like, questioning.
Here's the thing, though. Like, and as embarrassing as this may be, when I was playing when I was older.
This is good.
I still had to, man. I was, like, 16 years old with a Power Rangers tattoo on my left arm. Like, I didn't care. And to be honest with you, so, like, if I played 3 games in 3 days, like, I couldn't take the first tattoo I couldn't take off, and I had to put on a new tattoo for every game.
So you did have a full sleeve.
Like, there were times where I had multiple tattoos on,
yes,
for sure.
So you were the other team was like, you're all, obviously once you have your uniform on, they can't see it, but like when you guys are like walking into the arena, I bet the other 8-year-olds were like, look at that big, I'm assuming you still had a full beard when you were 8. They were like, look at this guy with the beard and the tats.
No, the best part about it, honestly, like, and growing up playing in California, after Wayne Gretzky kind of came in and solidified what youth hockey would be in California, there were a lot of different places to play. So, like, I remember, you know, I'd be with a team for, like, a couple of years, and then I would either move or go to a different organization or whatever it was. So, like, I remember playing against kids that I was on a team with, like, 2 or 3 years prior. And they would chirp me for the tattoos, and I'd be like, still kicking your ass. Like, what do you, come at me. Like, that's fine.
Step.
Yeah, no. Like, oh, you still got that stupid Power Ranger tattoo? I'm like, yeah, check the scoreboard, asshole.
So there's been talk about us getting a beer league team together on the ice.
Sure, yeah.
And if we do end up having that, we need to get some Rink Rats press on tattoos for you to wear.
Oh, dude, I'll get my wife on it. She still needs to make you your shirt, by the way, which she will do. But, yeah, I think we can get Rink Rats tattoos, and that'd be great. We should just have a Rink Rats hockey team.
Yeah, but we need the tattoos.
With the tattoos.
Otherwise, you're not going to be able to play right.
Oh, clearly not.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm in peak physical condition to play hockey right now as it is.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, though. If you have the tattoo, you'll be fine.
That's absolutely true. So, superstitions are fun, though. Like, I enjoy it. I think it's hilarious. But, again, I think that when you're a professional athlete at that level, your ability to kind of compartmentalize things into specific boxes. I lost. It sucks. I'm moving on. I'm putting it behind me. We won. That's great. But we're still not in the playoffs. We're putting this behind us. Oh my gosh, William Karlsson said shutout, and I heard it on the bench. I feel like that creeps in a little bit more. Like you were saying, if somebody comes up and says something to Marc-Andre Fleury while he's in the midst of going for a shutout, I think that you start to, if your mind wanders for a second, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Your focus needs to be where it needs to be.
That's a totally different thing than people saying it on Twitter. Though,
I completely
agree.
Or
at the bar or at their house. And that's why I love messing with people. I wouldn't, if I was a player on the team or if I was a coach on the team, I wouldn't mess with Fleury like I mess with the Golden Knights. Does that make sense? I wouldn't
Fleury
skated by, I wouldn't say, only 6 more minutes till the shutout,
but
just,
like,
to screw with him. But that's totally different. Then now, on the other hand, I do love screwing with the fans. It's
sure.
My favorite part of the game is tweeting about the shutout before it happens because they get so angry. They're so illogical.
My favorite part about hockey Twitter is that hockey Twitter takes everything as gospel. Like,
yes.
Like, you can't be sarcastic to hockey Twitter because they just lose their mind.
It actually, them not getting my sarcasm actually worked in my favor last game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because obviously I've been saying Fleury's tired.
Sure.
They need to rest him.
And
then he has the performance of his life and gets a shutout.
I mean, granted.
And so I tweeted, who said Fleury's tired? Idiots.
Yeah, thank God for Tyler Bischoff, called you out on that.
Yeah, making fun of myself
because
I'm the idiot that said he was tired and then he gets a shutout. And but the funny thing is, nobody understood that I was being sarcastic, so they all thought I was calling out the people that called him tired. So like all these like flurry backers are like,
Tell them, Jesse, they are idiots.
Yeah. Like Gerard Gallant is basically saying in the post game press conference, Jesse Granger is an idiot because he was questioning Marc-Andre Fleury and he doesn't know anything about hockey. And then everyone on Twitter's like, you tell him, Jesse. Yeah. You stick up for Flower. That's great. No, I had a tweet yesterday, and it was the initial reaction to the Golden Knights practice schedule today or yesterday and today. Because the reasoning behind not starting Malcolm Subban, at least that we got from Gerard Gallant, so I assume that it comes from Dave Pryor, is that Malcolm Subban needs more practice before he gets into a start. So what I thought was really funny is that they had an off day yesterday. So they played a game on Sunday. They have an off day Monday. They play again tonight, which is Tuesday. So my tweet was going to be, Gallant, Malcolm Subban needs more practice. VGK, we will not have practice on Monday. Because at what point do you say, okay, what's going on here? But my favorite part about it is if I would have tweeted that out, I'm pretty sure it would have fallen on deaf ears. Like, no one would have gotten the inherent sarcasm of the situation. So
it's tough in the written word to express sarcasm sometimes.
That's true. Now, one thing I was not sarcastic about during the game was Ryan Reeves. And how his hit completely changed the momentum of that game. One play. Now, I'm not talking about anything else that he did in that game.
That's because he didn't do anything else.
Right, exactly. That's my point. But like, what I'm saying is, if you take that play, and Ryan Reeves is capable of doing something like that in every game, which he, by all accounts, should be able to hit somebody in every game that they play, he can absolutely change the momentum of a game.
He can. And I think the demeanor he has when he's in these post-whistle scrums, mm-hmm. I like.
Sure.
Not many guys... He's a goon. Not many goons...
He's mad. I don't think...
Not many goons have that smile on their face when they're...
Hold on, I'm sorry. There's a TV on here, and somebody's... A lady is eating mayonnaise from a jar with a spoon.
Jesus.
What is wrong with people? Okay, go on.
She probably has a superstition. No, but when he gets in these scrums, that's one thing that I have liked, is mm-hmm. he gets under the other player's skin, and he's clearly having a ball.
Oh,
he's loving every second of it. But there's six guys trying to fight him at once, and he's just laughing.
That's the thing that he brings, though, right? Like, so... He can go into that scrum, and as long as he doesn't initiate contact, like if he doesn't throw a punch, if he doesn't lose his cool, he's got, like you said, five guys and the goalie, because it was Mike Smith on the ice, six guys wanting to tear his head off and none of them wanting to actually do it.
Yeah, and then what happens is he goes to the bench, and then those guys that are that's the difference. The Golden Knights don't need Ryan Reeves to actually play hockey because that's not his game. Those six guys that are just fuming,
mm-hmm.
their team does need them to play hockey.
Right.
And they can't.
Right.
Because they're so mad at Ryan Reeves.
And so the hit, right, was a big momentum changer. Woke up the building. The Knights were completely dominated in the first period by Calgary. Albeit most of the shots that did get through to Flower were from the perimeter. They got a couple of good looks, but they weren't great, great chances. Yeah.
I got the feeling when watching it that Calgary thought Fleury was off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't blame him. He was terrible the two games before that. So I think they were just like, let's just pepper him. Let's just throw everything we can at the net, and hopefully he lets us off one in.
And we talked about that. And I want to say it was Sean Monahan that gave us the answer. Well, you can't score goals if you don't shoot the puck, right?
Yeah.
And we were like, well, yeah, but were you getting the looks you wanted? Like, well, I thought we had some good looks. I'm like, great. I hear you. Were you getting the looks you wanted?
Yeah, they weren't dangerous.
Was it your game plan to throw 40 shots at Marc-Andre Fleury? Because if you throw 40 shots at him and it's all from the perimeter, he's going to make it look easy.
Yeah.
And he did.
And then they got some better looks, I think, towards the end of the first period, if I'm remembering right. Mm-hmm. And Fleury was really good.
He was. But so the hit happens, and then it so the hit was great. It was a clean hit. But what happened after that was what changed the momentum. The Golden Knights really didn't have much of a transition game going in the first period. Everything was played 5-on-5. And then Garnet Hathaway and Ryan Reeves get into a little bit of a scrum. They both go to the box. All of a sudden, it's 4-on-4. Calgary takes a stupid penalty. And the Golden Knights, for the first time in a handful of games, have open ice to work with. And when there's not a whole bunch of bodies clogging up the neutral zone, they're able to get in, get their entries, make some crisp passes, and they score some goals.
That pass by James Neal.
Phenomenal.
Great. And that was the second goal, because I think Colin Miller's slap shot was the first one.
The first one on the power play.
Which, Jesse was right. I called Colin Miller scoring way more goals in the second half of the season than he would in the first half. That was we did that.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Was it on Rink Rats or was it on the Golden Knights Insider Show where they did the? I don't remember. There was something we did something and my prediction was that Colin Miller will have
more goals,
more like double the amount of goals in the second half that he did in the first half, and he has been. Colin Miller's shot is so nasty.
It's stupid. I wouldn't get in the way of it.
One of the things Gallant said that I loved was, we want Colin Miller to shoot as much as he can on the power play, because even when the other team blocks it, they still pay the price.
Absolutely. And you're only going to block it once. Like, it's going to hit you.
I'm done with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's laying in front of the next one? Not me.
Probably Andrew Cogliano, because he's the best human that's ever played the game. Yeah. And he's, should still have an active game streak going.
So Colin Miller got it started with that one-timer from the point. And then that pass from James Neal to William Karlsson was, as funny as it sounds, vintage Golden Knights. That was vintage Golden Knights. Vintage from a couple months ago.
Yeah. Well, we haven't seen it in a while.
With this team, vintage is a couple months ago. Sure. They've only been around for 6 months. But I asked Turk after the game, how awesome was it to see those goals? And not just that you scored, the way you scored. Mm-hmm. You scored goals in the fashion in which you scored goals early in the year that got you to this point, to first place in the Pacific Division. They looked like the Golden Knights of old. It happened bang, 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 right at one after another. The crowd was going crazy. We hadn't felt that in a while. It feels like it's been 2-3 weeks, maybe longer, since we felt that. And it was good to see for the team because they needed that one.
And it was all because of Ryan Reeves.
No, it wasn't. Did Ryan Reeves make a good, solid, clean hit? Yes.
Did Ryan Reeves change the momentum and take Calgary out of what they were doing right?
Absolutely.
Yes. And did the Golden Knights take advantage of that?
But it still takes Colin Miller's 100-mile-an-hour slap shot.
Yes.
It still takes James Neal being extremely talented, having the vision on the ice, passing it over to Karlsson, who is the best one-time shooter in the NHL.
Right. Yeah, I know. I hear you. Did Ryan Reeves factor into any of those goals?
No.
Did Ryan Reeves change the momentum for those to happen? Did he lay the groundwork? Did he take a Calgary player to the box and open up more ice for the more talented players at 4-on-4? Yes.
Did Ryan Reeves have a positive impact on the game for the Golden Knights? Yes.
Yes, he did.
For the first time in his Golden Knights career, he did.
Has he had a better impact on the Golden Knights than Tomáš Tatar?
That game he did.
What about the games they've played?
If you take all the overall games and average them out, I think Tatar's still better. Has been better. He has not. Now, if you say,
who has more penalties?
If you say between the two, who has had the most impactful moment on the Golden Knights, that hit.
Sure.
But I think Ryan Reeves has had more bad games than Tatar has.
So our version of show prep is basically two or three text messages, right? Yeah. So I sent you Ryan Reeves greater than Tomáš Tatar, and it was mainly tongue-in-cheek, right? I don't think that when you get down to brass tacks, Ryan Reeves is better at playing hockey than Tomáš Tatar. But I think Ryan Reeves has had a greater impact moment so far than Tomáš Tatar, and I'm worried that we're not going to see very many from him. Like, he just hasn't been able to figure out any chemistry.
Well, whose fault is that? He's played with a different pair of guys every game.
Well, so that begs the question, right? They move James Neal, quote, down to the second line to play with his old running mates and Eric Halla and David Perron. And when that happened, everything seemed to kind of fall into place. But What do you do? What do you do with Tatar right now? Do you try to get him used to playing with Cody Eakin if that's going to be his centerman? Or do you try to play him up with Marchessault and Carlson to just get him around better players?
Yeah. So this is – and this isn't – I mean, I'm not a coach. This is my opinion, but I don't know if it's right. I don't know if it's wrong. But what I would do is play him with the guys he's going to be – you need him to play with in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And barring an unforeseen injury, he's going to be with Cody Eakin and Alex Tuch.
Right.
I want to see those three get something going in these last 10 games because they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to win the division. This team can have a horrible last 10 games and still win the Pacific Division. Like, they're going to be fine. Even if they were to somehow not win the division, that might end up giving them better matchups in the playoffs. It's not possible. The end of the world.
I mean, they're not going to finish third.
Yeah.
They're going to finish second or first.
Yes. So my point is, maybe don't use these 10 games to put the best possible lineup on the ice every night. Maybe put the lineups closest to what you think you're going to have in the playoffs, and that is Riley Smith, Marchessault, Carlson on one, Perron, Neal, Holla on two.
But you don't have Tuck, Riley Smith.
Yeah, so put Hika there.
But Hika's not with the team.
Call him up. This whole we can't call people up is pissing me off. Jesus. This whole Dansk should have been playing for the Golden Knights over the last two. I'm just going to say it. Look, it's a mistake for them to not call Oscar Dansk up. He should have been playing. He should have been giving Fleury spells to rest. They wouldn't do it because they only have four call-ups after the trade deadline. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. We can't. They had to send Hika back as soon as James Neal came back because they don't want to use one of their call-ups. They have four call-ups. Who else are they going to use them on other than Dansk and Hika? Jason Garrison is going to come into the playoffs? I freaking hope not. Just use – you have four call-ups.
So what you're
use them.
So what you're saying is George McPhee should not be hoarding his call-ups.
Yeah, I don't understand what he's saving them for.
So that's an interesting point. And the only reason that I brought up Tomáš Tatar is I agree with you. I think that if he is going to be on the third line with Cody Eakin and Alex Tuch, they need time to gel and find some chemistry. So that means you put a pylon up with, you know, with Marchessault and William Carlson. I don't know. Maybe you put Carpenter there. I don't know what you do.
Yeah, that would work too.
But you need to have your third line situation figured out. Because you already know what two-thirds of the fourth line is, right? Yeah. You've got Noshik, you've got Belmar.
And Reeves
you assume
now, until Carrier comes back.
Carrier when he gets healthy.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. You already know what you're going to get with that line, but your third line is all over the place.
I completely agree. And it's like, say, let's just say, like, best case scenario, you are playing Tatar with Smith and, I mean, with Marchessault and Carlson
mm-hmm.
to put him around better players
right.
and get him going.
Sure.
Say you do get him going.
Mm-hmm.
And then say with one game left in the regular season, Riley Smith comes back.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly getting his spot back on the first line. They're the best line in hockey. All of that was for nothing because now Tatar's going down with Tuch and Eakin, and that's not going to help him at all.
Different ways of playing the game.
He needs to get used to playing with those guys because that's who he's playing with in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
If the playoffs started tomorrow, I think Riley Smith would be activated.
Yeah, I agree too. I do.
But there's no reason to play him right now because they don't need to win these games. They're not must-win games. They need to be prepping for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you prep for the playoffs is get Tatar, Tuch, and Eakin playing well together because that is going... It might be overstating it a little bit, but that the play of that line could determine their destiny in the playoffs.
I don't think it's overstating
at
all.
If that line is really good, they can go to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Ken Wasinbin likes to say that the best player on the ice every single game is a player from the opposition. That the Golden Knights don't have one guy that just stands out above all the rest. Like, if you play the Kings, the best player on the ice is probably going to be Anže Kopitar.
That's if you're not including the goalies.
Well, right. But I'm saying, like, you know, position players, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anže Kopitar is more or less going to be the best player on the ice
yes.
if the Golden Knights and the Kings play. So you're going to rely, you have to rely on your third and your fourth line to be leaps and bounds better than any team you play in the playoffs. Because that's how the Golden Knights win games. It's often the first line and the second line being rewarded for the work of the third and the fourth line.
Absolutely.
Like, William Karlsson scores 39 goals this year, not just because he's got great chemistry with Marchessault and with Smith, but because they're able to roll four lines.
Well, it's because...
And they're able to get favorable matchups because of it.
I think a huge part of it is that they get to start in the offensive zone. Sometimes I think people don't realize how short hockey shifts are. It's like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
45 seconds. If it starts getting longer than 45 seconds, you're going to give up a goal.
Yeah.
You need to get the hell off the ice.
Absolutely.
So when your fourth line is terrible, they get hemmed in their own zone. Mm-hmm. Then they finally clear the puck out of their zone. The first line comes on, and the opposition has the puck attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have 30 seconds to defend, take the puck away from them, get the puck to the neutral zone, make an entry into the zone, and then set up your offense and try to score. That's a lot to do in 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Whereas when your fourth line is good, like Belmar, Noshik, and whoever's with them has been this year, they get the puck into the offensive zone. They dump it deep. They forecheck. Then Karlsson, Marchessault, and Smith come onto the ice with the puck already in that zone. They now have a full 30 seconds to do nothing but score. And that is a world of difference. So, yes, the third and fourth lines are super important, not because they score, because they reset the game and because they kind of set the stage for where what the first and second line has to do when they come on the ice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you're, especially for, I think Karlsson and Neal and Marchessault, Karlsson, Marchessault, and Smith play better defense, and they can play defense, steal the puck, go in transition, score. But the second line, I think it's even more important.
Mm-hmm.
For Perron, James Neal, and Holla, they're not as defensively inclined as the other, as that first line is. For them to start in the offensive zone is even more important. And they're so good at protecting the puck down there. They're so good at...
I'm glad you brought that up. And I swear, I look at David Perron and I don't even understand how he does it sometimes. Like, he's one of the big, not physically big, not like tall, but he is one of the more stocky built guys in that locker room. And you see it on the ice. You see how difficult he is, or it is for other teams to separate him from the puck. And he just uses his body so well to get between the puck and the defender, and he knows how to lean, and he knows which ways to use his leverage. It's amazing to watch the things that he can do, not just down low, but he's fearless at his own blue line, and he usually comes out of those puck battles with the puck, so you trust him in those situations. But
James Neal is good at it too. Not quite really, as good as Perron, but he's very, very good at it.
And that's what I love about that line is they play heavier than any other line on the Golden Knights. We always talked about, man, what line can get in on a forecheck, get the puck, and cycle it down low and try to exhaust some of the defenders. That's a line that can do it.
Yes.
And you see how that starts to wear down opponents. It starts to get into their heads. And then you got, you know, you have the next line come on, and the next line come on, and the next line come on. And every line does something a little bit differently. But it compounds on these teams, and that's why you have to have four lines that can play very good hockey that don't become a liability.
Yeah, and that is why they need to play Tatar with that third line. Because what's more important, beating Vancouver tonight because Tatar plays well with Marchessault and Karlsson?
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't win tonight, but that's another however many minutes he plays. Say he plays 14 minutes. That's another 14 minutes on the ice with those guys, and it's going to add up over 10 games, and you need them playing well by the playoffs. I just don't want that line to get thrown together right before the playoffs, because it's been shown. Tatar has struggled to build chemistry.
Right.
He has been, it's not all his fault. He's been juggled around. He's played with different guys basically every game.
Yeah.
But he hasn't gelled well.
No.
And for Reeves, his game that he plays has nothing to do with chemistry with the other players. He doesn't need to know where they are on the ice. He's not making passes to guys in front of the net. He's not weaving in through the zone. He's literally just skating around, hitting the crap out of people, starting fights, laughing at him as he goes to the bench. The chemistry factor does not matter for Ryan Reeves. For Tatar, a guy that's fast, skilled, he's not going to do the dirty work in the corner. He is a skilled player that needs to be in sync with his line mates.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that about Reeves, because I know, listen, typically what you want out of Ryan Reeves is this. If Belmar gains the red line and dumps the puck in, Ryan Reeves needs to be the first guy in on the forecheck.
Yeah.
There's, like you said, no chemistry to that. It's, oh, I'm a reactionary player. There's the puck. I'm first in. I go where the puck is.
Yeah. He's period. A dog chasing a car.
Exactly. Tomáš Tatar doesn't play that game.
No.
And he shouldn't play that game. And when I jokingly say Ryan Reeves is greater than Tomáš Tatar, right now he is, because his role indicates that he can be. He just needs to follow the play. He needs to be the first man in. He needs to create a little havoc, get to the front of the net. Very simple things.
Mm-hmm.
Tomáš Tatar needs to create around Cody Eakin and Alex Tuch. And you have to play with Cody Eakin and Alex Tuch to learn how to create around him.
Yep, I agree. And I think it's just a fundamental difference of what's more important. And I think Gerard Gallant is an old school guy that wants to win every game. I don't know if it's right. We'll see. I mean, he's going to win the Jack Adams.
Yeah.
He's been the best coach in the NHL this year. He's done a fantastic job with this roster. So I don't want to sit here and say Gerard Gallant is wrong for not putting them together. That's what I would do.
Yeah. Okay, what about Marc-Andre Fleury?
He needs to rest. And yeah, I joked, who said he's tired, idiots? But his shutout doesn't change my opinion on when he should be playing at all. Because when he's exhausted and he gives up a bunch of goals in the first round of the playoffs and the Golden Knights get knocked out, how important is that shutout against the Flames beginning of March?
Well,
it's not important at all.
I'll take it one step further. How important is the start against Vancouver?
It's not,
and you can't play
a guy that many times.
Let's look at their upcoming schedule, right? So they got Vancouver tonight, they got San Jose on Thursday, and then a back-to-back Colorado on Saturday and Colorado on Monday. San Jose matters.
That's the most important game of the schedule.
I think
the two against San Jose.
The two against San Jose are the most important games on the schedule, because if you can beat San Jose both times, you lock up the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no argument there, right? But the games against Colorado matter to an extent, because it's a potential first-round opponent. It's a team that you don't want them to come into T-Mobile Arena and beat you and think that they can win here.
Give themselves belief, yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Because the last time they came here, it was like 1,056-0.
Exactly.
About.
Yeah, it was bad. Especially if they're all, like, afternoon games.
Yeah.
It's just going to be...
That was so great. Our little interaction. You were in the visitors, right?
For which game?
For this last one.
Yeah.
So we're talking me, Ken from Sinbin, and Shang from
Hockey
Buzz.
You guys are talking to Carlson.
We're talking to Carlson, and Shang brings up the stat. You guys are 9-0, I think, in afternoon games.
Sure.
And Carlson didn't even realize. He goes, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we like those better. We should just have all afternoon games. And Ken goes, yeah, screw morning skate. You don't need that. And Carlson's like, yeah, we don't. Let's just skip morning skate. And I'm like, yeah, you might not want to say that's a Turk.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Great. So, like, why start Fleury tonight?
Makes no sense.
And so this podcast is going to come out tomorrow morning.
Fleury will probably have another 45 safe shutout, and I still won't care.
Or they'll lose to Vancouver.
Yeah.
But, like...
To me, the result doesn't matter. What matters is that he's played more minutes than any player in the entire NHL since Subban's injury.
So, what about the people, though, that say, well, he missed a lot of time earlier in the season?
Makes no difference.
See, to me, it doesn't make any difference.
His body does not feel the games in October right now.
Yeah, I agree. But my argument is, yeah, he missed time, but he wasn't hanging out doing nothing. He was recovering from a brain injury.
Yes.
Like, that takes a toll on your body. Maybe it's not the same physical toll that playing 21 out of 22 games takes, but it still takes something out of you. to recover your body to come back from a concussion.
Yes. And a good example, Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yeah, please talk about this.
A Vezina Trophy candidate has been outstanding this year. Ever since the All-Star break, his save percentage has dropped significantly. There's a Yahoo Sports story asking him, are you tired? He said, absolutely. He said something along the lines of, tiredness is not something I've ever dealt with before. This is his first year doing this Yeah. And he feels tired. And now, he's played 58 games. Fleury's only played 40. But since February, Fleury's played more games than Vasilevskiy has. And he's also more than 10 years older.
Well, right, but it's I guess the number is easy to get hung up on, right? He's only played 40 games. It's half the season. But again, if you space it out three games out of every four, if you get a day's rest or a game's rest every third or fourth game, that's a lot easier to recover from, especially since the season for the Golden Knights, since the bye week, has been pretty much every other day.
Yeah.
A game every other day.
And even Fleury said after the game, I mean, that's the thing. Everyone's like, everyone that doesn't agree with me on this has been saying, well, Fleury's fine. He's fine. He told me he was tired.
Yeah.
After a game, he told me my reactions were a little slow tonight.
Which was great, right? Because it was a New Jersey game.
Yeah,
he admitted to that.
Yeah.
So we were in the locker room. Chris Chapman got to go and talk to Nico Hischier about having a sandwich named after him in the New Jersey locker room because they won. But we were in the locker room, and I think I asked Flower about the broken plays that led to goals, you know?
Because they were weird goals.
They were really weird goals. But I said, how difficult is that for you to react? And the reason I asked him that question is he's an athletic goalie that relies more on his ability to react to the play than his positioning.
Agreed.
He is not Carey Price. He is a more athletic goalie. He's more along the Dominic Hasek spectrum, Jonathan Quick spectrum, than he is the Carey Price spectrum. And he said in the answer to me, he said, you know, it's something I've got to do. I've got to come up with those saves. You play sick, you play tired. And I think you clued in on that because when everybody walked away, you asked for clarity.
Yep.
And you got it.
Yeah, I said. Well, the thing is, he kept saying, you need to play tired. You need to play sick. Everybody has to. It's our job. And I look at him, I'm like, look, man, it's not an excuse. Right. I think he's afraid of saying he's tired because now it sounds like, oh, New Jersey's going to see these quotes and say, oh, they're lucky I was tired. It's an excuse. And I told him, like, it's not an excuse if you're tired. If you're tired, you're tired. Are you tired? And he goes, yeah, I was like, did you feel yourself out there? And he said, I felt like I was a little slow on my reactions. Fleury is not slow on reactions. If Fleury's anything, he's fast on reactions. That's literally why he's a goalie in the NHL.
Right.
It's his number one attribute as a goalie is his reaction time.
Sure.
And then, again, after one of the practices, we were talking to him, and he said, yeah, the game every other day schedule does make it harder. He's like, I had a lot. I'm fresh because I didn't play a lot early in the season, but this game every other day schedule does make it tougher to play every game.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. Tonight will be his 21st start in 22 games. That is insanity.
And the time to be tired is after game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, not 9 games left in the regular season, right? And so, like, that's the reality of the situation. We've got 9 games left in the regular season, and we've got Marc-Andre Fleury starting a game against Vancouver, who, while it's important to get more points, while it's important to win games, you're not in a position where you're going to miss out on the playoffs. You're simply not. I mean, every team behind you has to win every single game that they have, and by virtue of the fact that they are playing each other, that's a physical impossibility.
Here's a stat from my story in LasVegasSun.com. Go check it out.
Yep.
Today. That out. Yep. Came out today. So yesterday, once you're listening to this.
I think I read it. Maybe.
The Golden Knights currently have 97 points. This is before they play Vancouver. They might have 99 when you're listening to this. They have 97 points. No team in the 100-year history of the NHL has ever not made the playoffs with 97 points.
Right.
The highest point total for a team that has ever missed the playoffs is 96.
Right.
So the Golden Knights could I honestly think they could probably lose every game the rest of the season and still make the playoffs.
Yeah, but they play Vancouver twice. They play Colorado twice. They play Edmonton once and Calgary. Oh, my God, the wheels are falling off in Calgary. My goodness.
Anyway, and St. Louis.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, St. Louis gave up at the trade deadline. Yeah. They just didn't inform their players that they were trying to tank for Dahlin. So how do you rest him now, though? That's the question. Like, I'm sitting here saying he shouldn't be playing tonight. Like, if it's Vancouver, he shouldn't be playing. If it's Edmonton, he shouldn't be playing. If it's Calgary, he shouldn't be playing. Like, I firmly believe that the only remaining games that Marc-Andre Fleury should play are the two against San Jose and the two against Colorado.
See, this is the issue. If you rest him a bunch, say they're waiting until they clinch, and then they're going to rest him. If you rest him a bunch, now he's rusty going into the playoffs. If you're playing him, if you're benching him four out of the last eight games, now all of a sudden he doesn't have his rhythm that he had, and now that could be the problem going to the playoffs. So that's you're creating this problem by not resting him this whole time during these last 21 games.
So. You could have sat him tonight.
You could have sat him against New Jersey.
You play Malcolm Subban tonight. Fleury starts San Jose. Fleury starts both Colorado games. And then you play Subban against Arizona. You play Fleury. Maybe you don't do back-to-back. Maybe you play him against. Maybe you play Fleury against Arizona. And then you play Subban against St. Louis. Fleury against San Jose. And then Subban gets into one of the remaining three games. But again, that's only two out of the next nine games for a guy that's already tired.
Yeah, I think at this point they're not going to rest Fleury. That's just what it appears to be.
That's not a good strategy.
Every
going into
game
the playoffs.
For the last four games, I've been thinking, all right, Fleury's definitely not playing tonight. And then Gallant comes out and tells us he's starting.
But that was this morning. This morning, like I wasn't at morning skate, but I was sitting here like, there's no way in hell Fleury starts against Vancouver. Vancouver is awful.
So yeah.
And then I'm walking through the halls and I open up Twitter and there you are.
I get to morning skate and Fleury is always in the net closest to the front doors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like 99.9% of the time since training camp.
Yeah.
That's the net he plays in.
Yep.
And I get there and he's not at that net. Subban is.
Yeah.
And Fleury's
like, oh, yes.
And I'm like, oh, that's the starter's net. Subban's playing tonight. And I told Ken, I'm like, Subban's starting tonight. Look at him. He's over in the starter's net. Like right after I said that, Fleury skates off the ice and goes in the locker room. I'm like, well, never mind. So yeah, this team just. And like I said, Dave Pratt, Gallant's going to win Jack Adams. If there was a trophy for goalie coach of the year, it's going to go to Dave Pryor without a doubt. They know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. I think.
That's a glowing endorsement.
I think Marc-Andre Fleury.
They're great. I have no idea what the hell they're
doing. They know what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing.
That's true, I guess.
Marc-Andre Fleury is the single most important thing to a playoff run by the Golden Knights.
I completely agree.
And they're not treating him like he is.
Well, the problem is going to be, and I'll have to go back and look at the seasons, and I'll probably look this up after we get done recording this, but I'll have to go back and look at the seasons where Marc-Andre Fleury was really, really bad in Pittsburgh in the playoffs, and I'll have to look at the games played, and I'll have to look at some of the trends there, because it's unfair to him after the year that he's had statistically, to throw him into a situation where he's gonna falter in the playoffs. And I don't think that Dave Pryor's looking at it that way, but if you run him into the ground at the end of the regular season in games that don't matter, but you don't rest him enough and play him enough to keep his rhythm, you're setting him up for failure.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like now they've gotten themselves into the situation where if they do rest him, it could mess up his rhythm. They should have been resting him this whole time. Not resting him, just playing him like a normal goalie. Every three or four nights, give him a game off.
Call up Oscar Dansk.
It should have been Dansk the whole time, because if it was Dansk and not Lagasse, they would not have done that.
The only reason they did that, the only reason they played him 19 out of 20 games when Subban was out, is because it was Lagasse, and he has the worst save percentage of the entire NHL. That's a I'm sorry. I like Max. Nice kid.
Great hair.
I'm always talking to him. Yeah, everybody loves the lettuce. I'm not into the whole hockey hair culture, but he's a nice kid. As a goalie, I'm fascinated by their gear that they wear because it's so much better and so much more expensive than what I wear. So in the locker room, I would always like ask him things like, oh, look at your toe ties. They're so much different than mine. Like, his toe ties are Velcroed. It's
sure.
wild.
Yeah.
And he's just got little things that are different. And I would always talk to him. He's a nice kid.
Yeah.
He has the worst save percentage in the entire NHL.
And Antti Niemi plays in the NHL.
Yeah. He's not good because he's not an NHL goalie yet. He may be somewhere sometime down the road. That's up for debate. But right now, he's not. And him being the backup is the reason. There's no disputing that. He is the reason that Fleury played 19 out of 20 games. If you would have called Oscar Dansk up, you could have rested Fleury more. They chose not to because they're saving their four call-ups. Watch, when the season ends, they're still going to have those four call-ups.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Yep.
But that's what they're doing.
I mean, outside of Dansk, like you said, outside of Dansk and Hika, are there two other guys you'd call up from the AHL right now?
Yeah. Peary, you're really going to call up a guy that hasn't played for him all season?
No.
Of course not.
Maybe Jason Garrison. Maybe.
I mean, if you had like three defenders go down in one game, then yeah.
But that's the point, right?
But that's the thing.
They don't even have four guys to call up.
But that's the thing. Even if those guys were to go down, that counts as an emergency call-up. It doesn't count towards your four.
Right.
Oh, my God. The more I think about it, the more angry I get that they just won't call Dansk up. And that's the thing. Why isn't Subban starting tonight? If your answer is he's not healthy enough, then he should still be on IR and Dansk should be the backup goalie.
Completely agree.
And he should be playing tonight.
So, real quick before we get out of here, the last bit of news or show prep that we did was Calgary is fragile. And I say fragile, not fragile, fragile. Because the best part about going into the opposition locker room after games is you get to see how different media deal with different situations, right? So, like, the Calgary media is just no holds barred, man. Like, their beat writers write to Mark Giordano. Is it fair to call you guys fragile? Are you a fragile team? Something doesn't go your way, you just fragile. Like, every question, why are you guys so fragile? Why are you so mentally unprepared for games that you just can't win if you face adversity? And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, oh, you know, maybe that's unfair. So what do? I watched Calgary play last night against Arizona, and they lose in regulation to Arizona while they're fighting for their playoff hopes and dreams, lose to Arizona. Mike Smith goes to the team that couldn't ever get him into the playoffs, and they lose to Arizona. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, at what point here in Vegas are we going to get as brazen as the Calgary Flames media? Now, granted, we haven't had much reason to. They haven't lost very much this year. They've been pretty good about bouncing back after tough losses. But, like, how bad does it have to be, and how long does it have to be bad for you to start saying flat out to players to play a game that you can't play as a journalist? Like, there's a reason. You're a journalist. They're professional hockey players. At what point do you say, you guys are fragile? Why?
Yeah,
It was uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think they're wrong. Now, asking it is one thing. Saying it is another. I don't think you have the right to say it. I will say that people have painted the Vegas media, the Vegas hockey media, as soft compared to Montreal, whatever. Mm-hmm. This team hasn't given us a reason to be hard on them.
No.
There's been one thing that I've had a reason to be hard on the Golden Knights for. And I think I was very adequately negative about the team, and that was Cox blocked. That was the television thing.
Yep.
This team hasn't really given me a reason to be hard on them for anything other than half their fans weren't going to be able to watch the games on TV. And I, in my opinion, I destroyed them for that until they got it done.
Sure.
To the point where when they did get it done, I got so much backlash from people saying,
You knew it was going to happen.
Well, they were just saying, you idiot, why, we told you not to worry about it. So, like, I don't get when I see that. I see it on Twitter all the time that they're like, oh, after a loss, like, how come you weren't hard enough? I think I asked Turk some tough questions. He hates me after losses.
Definitely after 8-3 losses.
Gallant
for sure, yeah.
Hates me in the press conference after losses. And Shang, he hates him after wins.
Oh, the greatest thing about Shang Peng is just that he is who he is, and I love that, right? But, like, Ali Lozov is fantastic, and I'm going to tell this story real quick, and then I know we got to get out of here because Ari's packing up and not even listening to what we're doing here.
I know this story is what I was actually...
Right, exactly. So we're sitting in a post-game press conference, and Ali Lozov is just like, man, I really hope that next season the Golden Knights play a home game on Halloween. And we're all sitting like, well, why? She's like, so I can dress up like Shang Peng and ask Shang Peng questions. Like, there's a method to his madness, and his questions are usually really good, and there's a reason why he's asking them.
They just piss Gallant off.
They just piss Gallant off because Gallant doesn't want to get into that stuff with us.
Shang Peng, Hockey Bus. So here are 9 facts that I found by watching this replay 16 times in ultra slow motion.
What did you see?
I saw 7 players do 14 different things at once. What did you see on that play? And you're Gallant, and you're like, how the hell am I supposed to answer this?
And then the one time he asked him like a softball question, like, hey, I saw a big smile on your face. What was it about? And he's like, we lost the game. I'm so bad.
We scored a goal. I was smiling. What'd you think? Yeah. James Neal gave me one of those.
Yeah.
When I asked him how his recovery was going.
Oh, sure.
How did your recovery go? What was that like? It was like a normal day without hockey. What do you think? I'm like, my bad.
Were you around for the, man, I don't remember what game it was. It was earlier in the season. It might have been against Dallas or somebody. But it went to a shootout, and James Neal took the shot
and fell.
And Gary Lawless asked him after the game. He was like, "So, how do you determine what move you're going to go to in the shootout?" And James Neal just looks at him. And he's like, "Yeah, I went with the skate the puck down and fall flat on my face. Like, did you not watch me?" It was one of the most honest, brilliant, fantastic moments of the entire season. It was great. So, on that note. We're going to leave you with Vegas media's soft because clearly when Gerard Gallant after an 8-3 loss only has a 2-minute and 8-second press conference, it's because we're not asking hard enough questions. So there's that. Jesse, where can people find you?
At @JesseGranger_ and LasVegasSun.com.
And
I'm starting to do some stuff on the press box. You can hear me 11 to 2 sometimes on ESPN Radio 1100.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Bringing the Golden Knight knowledge.
With Ed Graney and Clay Baker over there. Yeah, bring some hockey stuff to that show.
Nice. Good to know. We are working on potentially a really big guest, so we're going to try to hammer that out. Maybe that'll be as early as next week's podcast. That's what we're going to shoot for.
Yep.
Like us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating. Tell the people that we're better than Biscuits, a hockey podcast. Better than Dave Lozo and Sean McIndoe, and maybe then we'll get some plays and some love, and I don't know. Continue to do this stuff because it's really fun and we like doing it. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. Until next time, maybe the next episode will be about the Golden Knights and who they're going to play because they'll be clinched in the playoffs. See you.